Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.
Earlier on, we had Rory O'Connor from the Irish Independent, and Stephen Ferris joined us to talk rugby. So Rory was at the RDS yesterday, where Connacht came very close to beating Leinster. 8 minutes and 28 phases, pretty much inside the Leinster 22 and very close to the Leinster try line, ultimately ended with Leinster holding out. And so 2002 is still Connacht's only away win to Leinster in the professional era. And then Munster up in Belfast, they were 17-0 up against Ulster at half time, but Ulster turned it all around with a bonus point win in the end. So pretty remarkable game up there. And as I put it to Rory yesterday, was part of what's been a really, really good set of Interpro games.
Yeah, it's been brilliant. And we've had the same kind of rotation that I would have bemoaned and a lot of people would have bemoaned over the last couple of years, which is, you know, probably necessary for Ireland's success. But the teams have just got on with it, and we've seen a couple of really, really cracking games. Teams kind of contrasts and styles, which have worked really well for the matches themselves, and a couple of really, really, really good games. I mean, that one before Christmas, on Stevens's Day between Munster and Leinster were probably the pick of them, but even the two yesterday, you know, loads of drama right in the balance up until the end. You can't ask for much more. So, yeah, it's been brilliant.
Yeah. So at halftime last night, Stephen, Leskis is looking fairly ashen-faced. They're off the back of shipping 44 points in Galway. The home crowd are watching Munster come up and actually effectively tear Ulster apart with very, very simple rugby.
Yeah, it was. And I think watching the Connacht game, you know, the Munster lads knew that they were just going to go to Belfast. They were going to keep it tight. They had a pretty experienced front row and they were going to scrum and maul Ulster, and a bit like Connacht did the week before. And they got so much success out of that. Find themselves 17-0 up at half time. And I think they just ran out in the second half and thought that it was going to be more or less the same again, and that didn't happen. Ulster made a couple of great changes in the front row, which shored them up a bit, and then when they started to get a bit of momentum, then the tide just turned. And, you know, fair play to them. I know there was and you'll maybe touch on it in a minute, Joe, about the red card, but you know, from an Ulster's fans perspective at half time, we were like, oh no, here we go again, and there was this feeling and around the stadium and, you know, anticipation to see what Ulster team was going to run out and see what reaction we were going to get. And thankfully, we got the right one.
It's the biggest problem up in Belfast at the moment, that you don't actually know which Ulster team is going to come out.
Yeah, it's not. And Eddie O'Sullivan sums Ulster up brilliantly over the last couple of weeks. Ulster are like a bungee cord. You know, they're up 1 minute and down the next. And, you know, even last week, you see we were down. And, you know, a couple of weeks previous, you get a two great results against Harlequins and you're back up again. And then, you know, yes, last night in that game, you just seen exactly that. Rubbish in the first half, like absolutely rubbish in the first half. Couldn't hold on to the ball, getting absolutely dominated up front. And then in the second half, from, you know, rubbish to brilliant within, you know, 10 or 15 minutes of a break. And it's just like, why can't Ulster perform like that from minute one? You know, go to Galway, they find themselves 12 points down straight away, the heads just drop, and I just don't know what clicked at half time. But I think there was maybe a few harsh words said and a bit of a reality check that, you know, they needed to go out and do themselves justice and do themselves proud, and because it could have been an embarrassing one if things hadn't went their way.
So there was decimation up front, Rory, as Stephen mentions, and Rodney Ayew and Kyle McCall get taken off at half time. So that seems to shore things up in the scrum. But, you know, even at half time, Stephen on the BBC coverage was talking about lads walking back to get back involved in mauls, the line out at sixes and sevens, like all the basics were a bit of a mess. It's very hard to even begin to understand why that changes at halftime.
There was a softness to Ulster in that first half that you just don't associate with Ulster packs in Belfast. And I think a lot of it, and I wouldn't like to pin it all on one man, but I thought that Rodney Ayew was really, really poor. And you could see that Ulster players, one stage Alan O'Connor looked at him and I said, what were you doing there? Like, he was, you know, wandering around. He wasn't fully committing to the breakdown. He was doing his own thing. And when he came off and Vian Herps came on, it was just I think that set the tone. Obviously, Callum Black as well had a good second half, but there was just a steel to them. You can't play like that in front of your own fans for 80 minutes. I mean, you're playing for your coach's job, you're playing for your own futures, because from every, the talk is that John O'Gibbs is going to implement a bit of a clean out up front over the course of the summer. Mm. And the changes they made at halftime worked, and I think there was pride at stake as well. You know, Ulster are associated with having a strong pack at home. You know, that Ravenhill was a really scary place to go in the 90s into the 2000s at times. And just to see them bullied by a second string Munster team by and large was just very hard to get your head around.
Mm. And as Rory says, Stephen, with, you know, Les Kiss under a lot of pressure, is that fair on IU? Is he a big part of the problem, or was he certainly last night?
Yeah, I think so. And you correctly highlighted him at half time. And, you know, just the work rate to get up off the ground and get back into helping your teammates out. And there just didn't seem to be that that get up and go with him. And I think that's been missing ever since he joined Ulster. Yes, you get the odd big hit when he's fit. And that's, I think, one of the major problems is that he hasn't really been fit. We haven't seen him have a run of consistent games. But I think it wasn't just Rodney Ayew's fault. I think, you know, the pack in general should have taken a collective responsibility for their line-out not functioning, overthrown in the line-out, their maul defence. They were just, they didn't know whether they were going up or they were staying down. Like, they went up in the line-out 5 yards out from their own line and didn't get anywhere near the ball. And then as soon as that happens, they're on the back foot straight away. Two or three guys are hitting in and the other guys are trying to hug the Munster players. And, you know, Munster, in fairness, jogged over the line on a couple of occasions, and thankfully they got that sorted out. And you know, it's most of the games are won or lost up front, and thankfully they managed to get their forward pack going forward in the second half.
So I wonder, is that a lack of confidence in their ability to maul there if they're going up 5 metres out? I mean, if it was a steely, Rory talks about a steely Ulster pack traditionally up in Ravenhill, might be confident to say, do you know what, let's not contest this, but let's be rock solid and we'll see these guys off. Maybe like they, half the reason they're at sixes and sevens is they had no confidence in where they were up front.
Yeah, and it'd be interesting to see what the message was from the actual coaching team. So, you know, that would have been talked about during the week. If Munster get a 5 yard line out, you know, what are we going to do here? You know, I think Al O'Connor was calling most of the lineouts throughout the evening, so he would have been charged of the defensive lineout also. So I think, you know, there's a few questions need to be answered, and maybe it's not just from the players, but from the coaches also. But from a Munster point of view, they would have just looked at the Connacht game and said, right, lads, this is what we're going to do all evening. We're going to take these boys up front. And that steely, you know, grit and attitude that Rory's talking about, I think it more just comes down to physicality and fronting up.
Right.
And, you know, they really didn't front up. And that was evident in the first half display.
Rory, how much pressure is Kiss under? On the back of the European games against Harlequins, it was a real sense a corner might have been turned here with some defensive lapses. And then this had the potential to be an utterly disastrous festive period for them. They've kind of averted that, but it's kind of hard to know where he is right now.
It's slightly tenuous. Like, there was definitely a lift, and it eased, those Harlequins games eased the pressure, but I think he only has a certain amount of credit with the fans. I think there's a lot of disquiet up there when you go up. You can sense that the crowds are not as big. There's just a little bit of doom and gloom about the place that got lifted by those results, but then you go and get hockey by Connacht, and you know, Ulster very rarely lose to Connacht. So I think he needs to build a bit more credit with the fans. I think getting out of his pool would be huge. I think, you know, getting a result, you know, a result in the RDS looks unlikely the way Leinster are playing, but, you know, building on this, you know, they have momentum now. That was a really strong finish. Like, Les Kiss is dealing with a difficult hand this year. They built a team around Paddy Jackson and he's not available. Rory Best has barely played all season. He's kind of having a Sam Warburton season where he plays for Ireland and not for Ulster. He's have a string of injury problems that I suppose he's avoided over the last, since he became Ireland captain. So I think Les, that, you know, there are circumstances that have gone against Les this year, but I think just that he's been there at a difficult time. He's rebuilding, and it's probably an impatient place to rebuild in because of the successful club that was there before. So I think he is under pressure. I think results like last night, you know, the first half performance didn't do him any favours, but the response, the players played for him, they played for themselves. That's got to stand to him a bit.
Yeah, I mean, all that said, Stephen, if Sammy Arnold doesn't get that red card in the 58th minute, which also leads to an Ulster try, and then they score another try 3 minutes later, like, this game really turned in the space of 3, 4, 5 minutes. If Arnold doesn't get sent off, you wonder what would have happened there.
Yeah, I think Ulster definitely did have the momentum, though. They had the wind at their back. They were playing towards the clock. They're the favourite way to play. Even when I was playing as a player, it almost felt like you were playing downhill when you're playing that way.
And is there actually a hill there?
No, there isn't, but it's just it's just the way it kind of feels when you're on the pitch. I suppose running against the breeze all the time almost feels like you're running up the hill. So, maybe that's just a mental thing. I think if Sam Arnold hadn't got sent off, that the match would have went right down to the wire. You know, I think Ulster might have been pushing for that winning score within the last minute or two. And, you know, obviously they ran in a bonus point try that nobody expected in the last minute, but...
Yeah,
it's on hindsight, I'm not too sure. Was it a red card? If I had been Sam Arnold, I would have been, you know, I would have been disappointed to be given a red card. But that's just the way the game is. That seems to be the letter of the law. And Van Gran, and all his post-match media stuff said that he thought it was a red card just because there was contact made to the head. So there's no excuses there. But I thought in general the match was played. Amongst the two teams, it was a brilliant kind of contest.
Yeah.
For a red card, kind of for everybody to be talking about the red card afterwards instead of, you know, a great fight back by Ulster, kind of took the gloss off it for me slightly.
Okay,
Joe, I watched the game back today rather than live because I was working during it. I was at the Leinster game, but I guess I knew the results. So you're kind of looking for things, but I think the 37-minute lineout when Niall Scannell threw the ball over the top of the lineout and. Once we're on Ulster's line when it's 17-0, if they catch that, they've already scored two mall tries. I think that's where Munster let it slip a bit. They gave away a penalty at the other end. Ulster didn't score off it.
Yeah.
But they had, that was the winning of the game. I think it was the bonus point score. I think that might have been a mountain just that bit too far. And I think, if Munster are looking for excuses looking for reasons that went astray, yes, the red card going down to 13 men is big. But that moment where that ball didn't go to hand when their mall was so dominant, I think they'll really regret that moment. They've got a discipline problem as well. I was just looking at their season-long stats. They've conceded 114 penalties across their 12 Pro 14 games this season. 7 yellow cards and 3 red cards in those games. That's an awful lot.
And you know what? A few people speculated that might have something to do during much of the season with Razi Erasmus's imminent departure. You know, it's the kind of thing which maybe slips when you know a coach is going. So that excuse is gone. Yeah. So it's a more serious problem potentially for them.
And we've asked Van Gran about it, and he says, look, I've looked at it. There's no consistent one reason why they're giving him away. Look, they were under a lot of pressure. Ulster had them on the cosh, and that's when your discipline starts to slip. But if you're conceding 9 penalties a game, you know, if you look at, you know, take the Joe Schmidt Ireland example, you're looking at 5 or 6 a game. That's where they're looking to be. Munster have a discipline problem at the moment, and that's really, they gave Ulster lots of ins into the game, partly because of Ulster's pressure. So I think that's something Munster really need to tighten up on.
JJ Hanrahan left 7 points behind, which isn't great, but what about his general play at 10?
I think he needs a run. And he's probably not going to get it because Ian Keatley's playing very well. He didn't look hugely confident. He hasn't had a lot of game time over the course of the season. He was a little bit lateral, take Johnny Sexton as the prime example, and I'm watching him at the RDS, you know, the way he takes the ball to the line, the way he commits defenders. JJ was a little bit lateral at times. I thought he was really committed. I thought he was trying really hard. And I wondered, trying too hard is a bit of a cliche, but I think he just needs a consistent run of games to get his form up, because it's very difficult to be dropped into a team and try and lead them around the pitch when you know Ian Keatley's probably going to come back next week. And at some stage, we hope Lionel will recover from this neck injury and he'll be there as well. So it's tough for JJ at the moment.
Yeah, quite clearly Stephen, Conor Murray is well clear of the chasing pack. But I mean, what an interesting day yesterday to watch Luke McGrath play very, very well. I'm sure Kieran Marmion, you know, is looking over and thinking, God, this guy is hot on my heels. And then once again last night in a very inconsistent Ulster team, John Cooney is just rock solid, Mr. Consistent. You gave him man of the match. I think as much for last night as his general... a month or 2 months at the moment. This lad is really, really solid. It's an amazing story.
Yeah, it is. And it's fantastic to see too. You know, it's a guy who's been at Leinster and obviously been down at Connacht, and he's come up to Ulster and he's been a revelation for Ulster. He's been Ulster's most consistent player, as you said, and he's been driving the pack around really well and is kicking, especially last night when he needed to kick that one from the touchline just to give everybody another breath before the match kicked off again, and he nailed it straight between the posts. And he's just been so consistent, and he's actually a pretty confident fella. I met him after the game and he said to me, Stevie, I thought we would go out there in the second half and actually pull it back and do it. And I went, really? And I was like, well I wasn't kind of sure that was going to happen. So I think from him personally, he has an air a confidence over him that, you know, he is playing very well and he can get this team to go forward and he's going to kick all his points. And, you know, that's brilliant to have an eye on because he's big, big boots to fill in Ruan Pienaar, who's left. But as you say, he's been absolutely fantastic this season and consistent, which Ulster haven't been.
Yeah. Leifano is playing quite a few games with busted ribs at the moment. Les Kiss was saying that he'll go to him at half time and say, look, you can come off now if you're in bits. And he's saying, no, put me back out there. They'd be desperate to keep him. They're not going to, as we know. So once he departs, what are the murmurs on who's coming, Stephen? Because the Quade Cooper link seems to have been quashed in the last few days.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Do you know what? I don't think Quade Cooper would be the right person to come to Belfast and play in a wet, windy Friday night rugby.
Not even down towards the hill end, no?
No, definitely not. There's a few rumours floating around, but it's all hearsay and it's all whispers, and I'm not really sure who's going to come in. A few guys have had a run over the last couple of weeks. Pete Nelson started last week and didn't have a great game against Connacht. So I'm not really sure who is going to come in and fill the Leifano's boots because he's been fantastic this season. But yeah, it's a big void that's going to have to be filled, and I think they're going to have to go into the market and get somebody, because obviously the Paddy Jackson situation is going to linger on for a long time. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens there, Joe.
Leinster 21, Connacht 18 at the RDS was another really enjoyable game to watch, Rory. I know you were at it. So there's a few aspects. I mean, the kind of more memorable one is the finish, where there's a 28-phase Connacht attack, which takes us 8 minutes into added time. Ulton Delan was saying we just lost our head and our shape in the last 10 phases or so, because he made a real breakthrough and looked like he was going to get over and didn't. So, I mean, it was unbelievably dramatic. This was not comfortable for Leinster by any means, and Connacht just huffed and puffed at the end. You couldn't fault them in many ways, and Leinster, such is the culture now, we're just not going to give up. There is like a win-at-all-cost mentality about this team now. So it was a really thrilling finish.
It was. It was a game within a game. You know, it was you kind of end up, you're writing a match report afterwards, and I almost focused entirely on that little kind of cameo, because it was the game. It was where it came down. It all boiled down to that. And after that Ulton Delan break, Rory O'Loughlin was very unsteady on his feet. We heard today he's going for the return to play protocols, but he played on. He kind of fought the doctor away and played on. And Matt Healy was screaming for the ball because he knew this guy wasn't right, and they never spotted it. And if they'd given that pass left, I would have put my money on Matt Healy and getting over the line, but they just took it up in the forwards, and it was meat and drink for Leinster in terms of, you know, they were disciplined. All the things Munster weren't at times yesterday, they were disciplined, they stayed in their shape, and they just drove them back. And they went from their 5 metre line out beyond the 22, and ultimately Scott Fardy chops Conor Carey and Max Deegan with one knee on the ground that the referee missed, forces the penalty. So it could have gone either way. It could have been a draw. They got away with that a little bit. But it just feeds into this narrative we have about Leinster at the moment, that they just look like the real deal. Mm. I mean, they probably took a big gamble with their pack yesterday. They rotated deep into their squad. Whatever about the depth they have, you're talking their, you know, fourth and fifth choice locks. You know, they're probably third choice front row, apart from Sean Cronin, probably the only first choice player in the squad. Their third choice number eight scores a try, Max Deegan. They have these talented guys, but I think when you put them all in together, you're still taking a gamble. And Connacht probably won that battle, but if you have the likes of Sexton, Lowe and Rob Kearney in your back line, Gary Ringrose as well, you have the class. And you know, Connacht dominated possession and territory, but Leinster still had way more clean breaks, way more offloads and all that stuff. So they took that gamble and they just about got away with it.
Yeah, 13 changes from the game at Thomond. So that's, I mean, but you mentioned maybe Connacht had more of the ball, but Leinster looked more threatening. Which brings us on to James Lowe, who is just good times to watch. If nothing else, there's a bunch of Leinster fans now saying, great, this is going to be a lot of fun. You had it in your piece today in the Irish Independent. He made 110 metres from 13 carries. He beat five defenders. There were offloads. I mean, his offload alone to set up the Deegan try, you suddenly watched that and thought, okay, great, this guy is going to have a lot of fun and also be very good. So he's fantastic and linked up with Sexton really well. Like, those two had an instant understanding.
Yeah, and the video didn't do that offload justice. I watched it back afterwards. I was almost like, that wasn't as good as it was at the time. It was class. It was just, he just seems to have this brilliant attitude.
Busy.
He just wants to play. Yeah, busy. He's everywhere, and yeah. and Sexton just seems to, he spotted him. He fit. This is the first time they played together, and he's already hitting them every time. He knows this guy is just danger, and he's linking up with him really well. And I thought it was interesting when Matt Healy scored his try midway through, you know, towards the end of the second half, and suddenly the game was back in the balance. Leinster got in another post, and it wasn't Sexton leading the team talk, it wasn't Ross Maloney, it was James Lowe. James Lowe was talking to all the players, and he's only there less than a month, and, and Maloney said afterwards, you know, when the new guy is the one leading the team talk afterwards, that's something you kind of respond to. So yeah, he seems like a really, really good signing. And I guess the question is, how do they get him into their Champions Cup squad? Because, you know, whatever about the solidity that they showed against Exeter, you throw him into that back line and you give Sexton that target to hit on a regular basis, it just opens up all sorts of possibilities. If he's doing that on a wet night in the RDS in January, what's he going to be like in the fast track in April?
Yeah. So explain the situation from the Champions Cup squad point of view. They have Scott Fardy and Jameson Gibson-Park in there. So where does that leave Lowe? What is the rule exactly?
It's a long and detailed and slightly obscure rule that we've never heard of until now. But right. It's basically you can only pick two overseas players in your matchday squad. But that comes with a lot of caveats. So if you've been in the country for 3 years, if you're able to apply for EU citizenship, all these things come into it. South Africans, for some reason that's too boring to go into, are allowed to play. They fit in into the European category. So they don't count. So it's basically Antipodean players. It's the Islanders, the New Zealanders and the Australians. So Scott Fardy and Jameson Gibson-Park are Leinster's two. They brought in Lowe. So Fardy's your first or second row. Gibson-Park's second choice, but he's probably quite far ahead of Nick McCarthy. And then Lowe is in this position where there's loads of competition, there's loads of players, so they can probably get by without him at this stage. But at some point, this guy's going to start in the wing and do all this great stuff and tear defences apart. Well, is he really worth your second choice scrum half, you know, being in ahead of him? That's going to be the balance that they're going to have to work out as the season goes on. Yeah. But
then in a huge game, Luke McGrath pulls his hamstring in the first 2 minutes and you're thinking, oh no.
Yeah, that's this kind of Conor Murray scenario that Ireland have, isn't it? So yeah, that's the choice that they have to make. And there is a question, why do they sign him if they can't play him all the time? But you see the value of him on nights like that. And, you know, he is going to put bums on seats in the RDS. I'd pick him. You know, I think he's well worth it. But there's going to be some disappointed Ireland internationals if you do.
Yeah, well, that's another point. Kieran Keane, you had the quote actually in the paper as well, Rory. Kieran Keane was saying afterwards, he's a great fella. I've known him since he was a nipper, extremely likeable. He's going to do really well here. He is one of those signings, Stephen, where he's arrived and instantly everyone is sold on this guy.
Yeah, he's quality. excuse me. I think last week he made a couple of bad decisions in defence, and actually spoke to Stuart Lancaster at the Ireland Fiji game, and we were chatting about James Lowe, and he was like, "I think he's an incredible talent going forward. I just need to work hard on him in his defence and making the right reads." And we're not sure what we're going to do with him regarding our European Cup squad, and that was a few months back. So, but I think he's come on leaps and bounds. I think he's adjusted well to the Pro 14, the way Leinster play, and he's brought a bit of X factor, and that's what people want to see. That's what I want to see, and you know, that offload was just absolute brilliance, and I want to see more of that, and I'd like to see him start on the wing for Leinster. But there's so much competition there. There's so many Irish internationals that are also sticking their hand up, but you know, all he can do is bang on the door, and he certainly done that last night or yesterday afternoon.
And if you're looking at the squad, so Scott Fardy's certainly in, and then you've Gibson Park there supporting McGrath. If you look at Lowe and maybe those slightly suspect defensive reads at Thomond Park, you probably juggle it all together, and the strength you have in that Leinster backline already, and Lowe might not be in the next round of European games either.
Yeah, that's why I'm not a coach. That's why I don't want to get involved in that, because it's a huge decision. But I would agree with Rory. I'd have him in there. I think Jameson Gibson-Park is pretty solid, but he can't pull a rabbit out of a hat and score some unbelievable tries and throw silky offloads. So for me, Lowe goes ahead of him.
Right, okay, fair enough. As for the festive period generally, I mean, in kind of 2-3 months when the excitement of yesterday wears away, what everybody will remember is Jordan Larmour's try. And sometimes, like, special players pick high-profile moments, i.e. when the whole country is full of turkey and watching the game because there's not much else to do on Stephen's Day, to kind of announce their arrival. And, I mean, this was one of the best tries we'll ever see at Thomond Park.
Oh, absolutely. It was sensational. And it was Gary Ringrose did it 2 years ago with that big break outside Sean O'Brien. And then there was the clamour for Gary Ringrose to be in the Six Nations squad.
I think that was the night O'Driscoll tweeted this guy could be in the Six Nations squad.
He held back this time, which was interesting. No, like, it was just... one of those moments where you just sit back and go, wow, it was properly special. I mean, Munster will look at the defence, you can analyse it away, but sometimes you've got to just appreciate that this guy has confidence, he's a bit fearless, and he just went for it. And that's to be really admired. And then you see Rob Kearney coming back last night and going, well, the young fella's done well, I need to respond, and he did. So, you know, that's more for Leo Cullen to kind of consider. Yeah. And then you're talking about picking James Lowe, but where does Jordan Lammer fit into his back three? Like, pick the Leinster team for a Champions Cup final, and you could be here all night trying to work out the conundrums, particularly on the back three. So, yeah. But yeah, Larmour is special, I think.
I didn't realise he was an international in hockey as well. So he's just one of these freakishly talented guys, you'd have to presume. What have you heard about him, Stephen, from people in the game coming through?
I haven't heard too much, to be honest. And I think he seems like a young fella with an old head on his shoulders, and he's just kind of getting on with his work, and he's not very vocal around social media, and he just kind of keeps his head down, and I like that about him. And the first time I set eyes on him was when he was up in Belfast, stepped inside Big Ian Henderson and set the Kingspan Stadium alight with an unbelievable try, and everybody just turned around and went, whoa, this guy's got talent. And it's just a turn of pace to go from 0 to 100 miles an hour that looks like 100 miles an hour in absolutely no time. So, you know, it was a great try in Thomond Park, but I disagree with you. The Craig Gilroy try in 2012 and Ulster beat them in the Heineken Cup quarterfinal, I think, tops it. Sorry, lads.
Not that you're biased, yeah. Somebody, I don't know who was on the Sky Sports CoCom, might have been Quinlan, but somebody made the point that what struck him about the Larmour try the other night was that he can make a step without losing any speed, that's a very rare quality.
Yeah, it is, and not too many people can make that step. And I think Brian O'Driscoll tweeted about it when he got 5 yards away from the line. He also had a ball transfer in there and tried to get a fend away with Sebu coming, and just those very small skill sets that he has is just incredible. And there's a big future for this young lad in the game, and I think Leo Cullen is the right man to kind of bleed him into this Leinster team. And you know, I think just to throw him into an Ireland jersey so quickly, it would probably be the wrong thing to do. He's still got a lot to learn, and yes, he scored some great tries, he's been on fire for Leinster, but he just needs to stay grounded and keep waiting on those opportunities to come, and when they do come, just keep running them in. And I think he's got a huge future in the game. He's a cracking player.
Rory, touching wood and everything, but if in 4 or 5 weeks Conor Murray was to go down injured in the Stade de France, who's the most likely to come on for him if that game was tomorrow?
I still think it's Kieran Marmion, because I think Joe Schmidt places huge faith in players who've done it for him before, and I think Kieran Marmion earned an awful lot of credit against Australia when he got thrown on the wing that time, and also when he came on in Cardiff and against England last year. I think McGrath's pushing him really, really hard.
But excellent yesterday.
He was really good. He's still prone to the odd pass to fall away, but his break, his decision making, his box kicking, I think he's really improving all the time. I really like Cooney. I've interviewed him a few times. He comes across to me really well. He's very confident, but I like that. I like the fact that he just took up goal kicking as a kind of a hobby, and is now nailing these kicks, and he doesn't really work with any kicking coaches. If Richie Murphy wants to help him out, he'll work with him, but really he does his own thing. And
how long has he taken it up?
Only a couple of years. He kind of was always telling, he was telling us last week that, you know, he said to Richie Murphy, I want to kick, and he said, no, focus on this when he was at Leinster, I want to work on your passing, work on this sort of stuff. And then at Connacht, a couple of players went down, he said, I'll do it, and he stepped up, and he says it's because he played football growing up, he played football in Ranelagh for Beechwood, and he just has this kind of belief that he can go out and do it, and he thinks, he's always believed that he could play at this level, he just needed a coach to have faith in him.
Right.
I think he was in Ireland camp, he ended up running a 10 because Johnny had that head injury, and I think he was a bit frustrated that he ended up running a 10 in Ireland camp, but you know, that gets into squads. I think he's a little bit away yet. I think he probably needs those injuries to get his chance, but he's the kind of guy that I think when he does get his chance, he'll take it. But I think Marmion is probably number one outside of Murray right now.
Yeah, Stephen?
I think I'd probably agree. John Cooney's excellent, and his form this season, I think he deserves a shot to be in the squad during the Six Nations. Luke McGrath's biting on both their heels, Marmion's and Conor Murray's, but Conor Murray is just a step above anyone in the 9 jersey within Ireland. He's just incredible, and he makes Munster and Ireland tick. So yeah, the boys have got a bit of catch up to do.
Okay, we'll leave it there for tonight. Rory O'Connor from the Irish Independent and Stephen Ferris, thanks lads.
Thanks, Joe.
Cheers.
Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.